Morning all. We'll be starting in a couple of minutes' time. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. If you could please take your seats. Roloff. And we're going to get started. We have an extremely busy morning. So what's new there? Welcome. CCNSO meeting in Cartagena. We have, as I said, a busy day, and we also have dinner tonight. The first session this morning is on a planning session, including the SOP and Finance Working Group, and that session is going to be chaired by Byron. So, Byron, over to you.
Well, nothing says Tuesday morning like strategy, eh? Tuesday morning, 9 a.m., like strategy? We're actually going to break this up into a couple of sections. One is really an update on the SOP, the Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group, and just a report on where we are at this point. We also have the ICANN finance folks, both the outgoing and the incoming, here to walk us through the operating plan, or the coming operating plan, and to give us a sense of the timelines and what's happening there. And then the third component will be an update on the newly established finance working group, because there's definitely some interplay between the SOP and the finance working group. So those are the three broad sections. It'll, to a great degree, really be a reporting as opposed to some of the more interactive sessions we've done in the past. I'd also like to, I think it's a good start that, unlike a number that I've been to, that we've all been to, I think we finally have the exact right-sized room. Not too small, not too big, no pillars in the middle. I think the temperature's going to be good. So in the spirit of continuous improvement, I think we found it. You know, that's right. We'll just keep coming back to Cartagena. Yeah. That's right, the Goldilocks room, exactly. Well, in terms of the SOP, it has actually been a challenging recent few months. As most of you are probably aware, in Cartagena, the board was supposed to be voting on the updated strategic plan. As you know, it is, or as you're probably aware, it is materially delayed. Now, given the SOP's work plan, it was critical for us to get the draft plan back in late September, as promised. That did not happen. And in spite of some communication with senior ICANN staff who are responsible for the strategy part, which I might point out is not the folks who are here with us this morning. Yeah. So that part is not their fault. In the end, the SOP had a conference call in the third week of November to have some discussion on a proposed draft, but fundamentally the draft for the upcoming strategic plan was not delivered to the community until November 27th. Clearly that was well outside of the original timeline. At which point, really, it was too late for the SOP to do the work that it envisions, which is to digest the draft, work on what the SOP believes are the key elements of the strategic plan that are relevant to the CC community, and then essentially take those and try to draft up a simplified version relevant to the CC community with some of the key points and some key suggestions on what the community might like to focus on. Needless to say, we were not in a position to do that, given we didn't receive it till November 27th. I did personally send a note to Rod and Mike Silver, our board member, noting that we would be unable to, as a working group, do what we intended to do. I don't know if it's coincidence or not, but within a few days of that note, and I'm sure I wasn't the only person making note of this, they extended the comment period to January 10th. So the good news is we do have an opportunity as a working group to actually do what we'd intended. The bad news, of course, is it is a very compressed time frame nonetheless, just over a month, running through, for many of us, the Christmas period, which I don't know about the rest of you, but certainly in Canada, where I come from, things work at about half speed for at least 2 weeks. So it's not an ideal time. That said, the working group met on Sunday afternoon. We mapped out a work plan over the course of the next month in terms of breaking it up into digestible chunks for the working group. And we will endeavor to put out materials for the community to help you make comment on the strategic plan. Now, I would, you know, clearly I would hope that everybody can do that. And as we've said before, please feel free to make liberal use of any of the materials that the working group puts out. That includes wholesale cut and paste with your name at the bottom. We encourage that. If that makes it easier for you, that's certainly part of what we're trying to do, or any part thereof. Basically, the working group is taking the plan that's just come out. We'll be digesting it over the next couple of weeks. In about 3.5 to 4 weeks, we should have something to push out to the community. Unfortunately, I'll say it right now, that doesn't leave a lot of time for you as community members to take and absorb that and do your own thing with it and then put it into the comment period. I just want to make sure that you're well aware that that's what will be happening, and of course it will come right around the just after the new year, so expect that to be in your inboxes at that time. From that, you can make your own comment, but I'll just remind you, January 10th is in fact the at least current close of comments for this. One of the other things that came out of this exercise or this situation is the SOP is going to draft a letter that will be sent directly to ICANN or to Rod and the board, stating the facts as we see them in terms of the breakdown and failure of the process. You know, ironically, one of the key items in the strategic plan is accountability and fundamentally preventing the community from providing input into something as absolutely critical as the strategic plan, or otherwise the direction of ICANN, certainly I don't think is living up, if not to the letter, certainly not the spirit of accountability. So we will be actually sending a formal letter highlighting our thoughts on the process to date in a factual way, but needless to say, it won't be necessarily a complimentary way. We've worked on that in the working group session on Sunday, and we will be putting that out to the community, but we will also be sending it as a working group letter. Again, feel free to use this as you see fit. If you think it's appropriate to take some part, any of it or all of it, and you're also welcome to add your voice to this. So that's what's happening in the Strategic Operating Planning Working Group. Needless to say, we'd hope to be able to report something a little more positive to you this time, but that is the situation we find ourselves in. So before I turn it over to Kevin and Juan to walk us through the operating plan, which is completely separate and distinct, are there any questions or comments about where the SOP finds itself at this point, or just in general around the situation? Going once, twice, no comments? Okay, I'm going to pass it over now to Juan and Kevin, and I will let Juan introduce himself, but he is the incoming controller to ICANN, and he is going to walk us through the timing and the operating planning process going forward. Juan, thank you.
Thank you, Byron. Thank you, members of the CCNSO. Good morning, everyone. Thank you again for inviting us to your meeting. I'll be taking a few minutes just to brief you on where we are with the budget development process, some of the enhancements that ICANN is making in the spirit of honoring its commitment to SO and AC leadership to provide earlier and more active participation in the budget development process from, again, from all of its SOs and ACs. Muy buenos días a todos ustedes, miembros de la CCNSO. Mi nombre es Juan Ojeda y soy el nuevo controller para ICANN. Y estoy muy emocionado de ser miembro de esta compañía y poder poder hacer un papel en la asistencia del triunfo de esta organización. Y espero conocerlos a todos y unos de ustedes. Muchas gracias. So as I had previously mentioned, based on community feedback, ICANN is making some enhancements to its budget development process, again, to achieve a few things. First of all, to allow for more active and earlier participation from SO and AC leadership. Some of the things we're trying to accomplish here is we want to clarify for you the budget development process, generally speaking, but specifically how SOs and AC leadership can provide specific input to its development. We want to clarify the current level of basic support services that ICANN is providing to the SOs and ACs to ensure that we're giving you the tools and resources you need to accomplish your job. We also want to clarify the budget timeline. There have been some enhancements to it. We're starting a little bit earlier in the process, so we'll be going through that. And lastly, discuss all of your thoughts or any questions you might have so that we can come back with a well-thought-out and agreed-upon process. Any questions? So some of the major enhancements we've made to the budget timeline is that whereas before the strategic plan and the budget development process were two distinct six-month processes, where the completion of the strategic plan was a prerequisite before we began the budget development process, we are now tying in these phases to the ICANN meeting. So, for example, the strategic plan was targeted for completion at the first ICANN meeting of the fiscal year, which is the Cartagena meeting, and we've done so. With the strategic plan has been posted for public comment at this point. The plan now is for the budget development process, the framework process, if you will. The target completion date for that is tied into the San Francisco meeting in March, and the draft plan, the draft budget to be approved by the board is targeted for completion or to be approved by the board in the June meeting in Asia. Whereas before, SOs and AC comments could only be accepted during the framework public comment period. Now we are expanding the timeline again based on community feedback, so that we can begin accepting input on support levels earlier before the framework has been posted. Some of the comments that I've heard is that by the time the framework was posted, the budget plan was pretty much half-baked, and there wasn't enough time for SO and AC input into its development. So we're in our efforts to honor that commitment, we're starting this much earlier. So this is a graphic representation of what our new strategic plan and budget plan developments are looking like. So for example, So this yellow arrow, which represents the strategic plan, as you can tell, is being targeted for completion at this meeting, at the Cartagena meeting. Sorry, my mouse was acting up. The green arrow, I don't know how well the colors show up on there, but the green arrow representing the development of the framework, as you can see now, it's the process begins prior to the completion of the strategic plan. This was not the case in previous years, and again, this is in line with our commitment for earlier participation. Expanding the timeline again for any input on support levels. And the framework, again, is tied into the completion of the San Francisco meeting in March. And lastly, the adopted budget, which is indicated with the red arrow, that will begin towards the tail end of the framework development phase and tied into approval for the June Asia meeting. The starburst here, I guess, if you will, or I guess for lack of a better word, these starbursts. These represents at what point each of the phases is posted for public comment. So right now, for example, the strategic plan is available has been posted on the website for public comment. The target date for the framework to be posted will be in February. And the adopted budget per the bylaws will be posted on our website by May 17th, again, for final period of public comment. Any questions on that? So now we'll briefly just go over the chain of events that will be taking place. So right now we're on the first bar, where we're finalizing a basic set of support services and finalizing the processes for the budget development phase going forward. Excuse me. The next phase will be a period where ESSO and AC submission requests will be submitted, which we'll be going over briefly. But there will be a point in time when submission requests will be received by ESSO and AC leadership, and they will be summarized. Once that's completed, then the framework will be posted for public comment, which will include the submissions received from ESSO and AC leadership. Then based on public comments received on the framework, we'll develop the draft plan, the draft operating plan, and post that for public comments as well. And then finally, the final operations plan and the budget will be submitted to the board in our June meeting for final adoption. What we've listed here is a basic set of tools and resources that ICANN is currently providing to the CCNSO. Some of these services include, for example, secretariat support, subject matter expertise, both from staff and or independent consultants, technical support for the wiki and website management, teleconference for all your meetings, as well as legal and finance team support. Again, this is a basic set of tool services that ICANN will be providing on a year-to-year basis. So these items don't necessarily require any specific submissions request. Now, in regards to specific services, we also provide travel services both for ICANN meetings. For ICANN meetings. These numbers represent, the top number represents the total fiscal year budget. These amounts are for the entire period, so if you're trying to break it out by meetings, we just obviously need to divide by three to get an accurate number on a per meeting basis. So now, what does CCNSO, the ESSO and AC leadership, what do they do if they want a specific special request above and beyond these basic set of tools and services? Budget requests, and in the next slide we'll show the template, but these budget requests will be received by ICANN through ESSO and AC leadership only, just for quality control purposes. The submissions will be sent via template form, emailed to controller@icann.org. Again, just to ensure that submissions are being submitted properly. At that point, ICANN will take the ESSO and AC submissions and perform a cost estimate for if it's staff, it's independent consulting, if it's telecommunications and what have you. And this will be a little bit more clear when we go to the next slide and we go over the actual template form. Once all of the submissions provided by ESSO and AC leadership have been cost estimated, they will be included in the framework, which will then be posted for public comment sometime around February of 2011. One other point that I want to make, I know that sometimes things are necessarily, we don't have full information by the time that we have to submit these templates for inclusion into the framework. So there will be a mechanism in place to continue receiving these special budget request submissions through the final period of public comment. That'll work slightly different, but as much as possible, it'd be best if we receive these during the initial phase of submission. Any questions so far? Great. So this is a request template for specific services that the ESSO and AC leadership would like to see included in their budget. Fill out, I guess, as much information as possible, provide as much detail on it. But the main area that finance will be working on, that ICANN will be focusing on initially, is what type of level by support area does the ESO and AC need? how much staff support, technical support, telecom support, and what have you. The frequency of it, how many units, how many headcount they anticipate they will be needing. Once these are received by finance, we'll go ahead and go through the process of cost estimating this based on current information that we have. And again, this will be posted on, these will be included in the framework for posting for public comment. So now to clarify the budget process timeline, check marks indicate steps that have already been completed. So we've already had our community kickoff calls this past month. Now in the month of in December here in the Cartagena meeting, we're performing the community discussions, or we hope to get some good feedback to make sure that we're all in agreement on the process and that there's clarity more than anything. After the Cartagena meeting, we'll begin the process, or the period, I guess, of budget submission from these requests. This period will go through the end of January. This is to allow us to give us ample time to cost estimate these submissions and include them in the framework, which will be posted in February. That framework will be posted for public comment from the period of February through March, up to the March meeting in San Francisco, at which point we'll begin discussions on the framework and discussing all the comments received from the community. After that point, we'll begin the process of developing the draft budget, which, again, by the bylaws, needs to be posted for public comment by the 17th of May, opening it up again to one final round of public comment for submission to the board for their adoption in the June meeting in Asia. Well, that concludes the presentation. At this point, I'll open it up to the members, too, if any of you have any questions, comments, need some more clarity on the process, we're here. So,
are there any? Please, we have these guys here for another 10 to 15 minutes. Any questions?
Sorry to ask. I just wonder what kind of benefit we will get from this formation.
The feedback that we've gotten from the community before is that ESSO and AC leadership felt that they didn't have enough input into the process of the budget development, not enough and not early enough. Whereas in the past, the input from ESSOs and ACs would not begin until the framework was posted for public comment in February. Some community felt that that was not enough time. So in the spirit of honoring that request, we're opening it up for earlier participation. So at the conclusion of this meeting, if SO and ACs feel that there's a specific request that they'd really like to see included in the fiscal year 12 budget, we're starting practically 2 months earlier in the process. With the hopes of being able to include, I guess, as many of these requests as possible, given the resources.
Did that answer your question?
I mean, as I participated, what I'm going to get the benefit from this? What kind of benefit am I going to get?
So fundamentally, what's in it for you, and how is this going to benefit you or us as individual members?
Well, why don't I take it? I'm Kevin Wilson. I'm the outgoing CFO. Thank you for the question. I think the short answer is the operating plan and budget process, development process, is a really important process for the community. Because it's really where the prioritization of the resources comes in. And so we've made great strides over the last, you know, really since the beginning of ICANN and getting that more and more open, more and more a community-based budget, not a staff-based budget, not a board-based budget, not a, you know, a special interest group budget, but the resources are allocated in the way they're supposed to be that are in the best priority in order for you, in this case, the CCNSO, to get your work done. So as Byron started out the meeting by saying the room is now the right temperature, the right size, and some of the problems that you've had in the past have been resolved, That's a good sign. Likewise, we want to make sure that the budget and operating plan development process is a fair one. It allows enough input so that the priorities are set straight. So this, for those who are not interested in setting the priorities, this probably wouldn't be that helpful of a discussion, but we wanted to be open and transparent and asked to do this outreach to explain that to those who might want to be able to set the priorities of the of the budget resources. Hopefully that answers. Hopefully your question is answered. Is it?
I might ask if you could just offer some of your thoughts on fundamentally what's happened is you've introduced a new component, right? It's a three-cycle component. You talk about the framework part and then the actual budget component. Two opportunities for feedback, one on the framework, one on the budget itself. The introduction of the framework piece is somewhat novel. Could you maybe give us a little bit more comment on what do you see as the distinction? What are you trying to get out of the framework versus comment on the budget? Because then as a community, one way to look at it is we used to only have to digest two pieces and provide feedback on two pieces. Now we have to do it a third time in theory.
Thank you, Byron. So I think the third element, which is actually providing input to the development of the framework, whereas in the past public comments or SONAC input happened once the framework was completed. I think that's one major distinction, the fact that SOs and ACs now have have an opportunity to have more active input into the development of the framework prior to it being posted for public comment. The critical element of the public comment period for the framework is that us in finance, I mean, we'd love to be able to say yes to everything, you know, but being an accountant, being in finance, it's in my DNA, I guess, to contain costs as much as possible.
Just say no.
Exactly. as opposed to Nike, just do it. Yeah, exactly. So what's going to be important, a real value-added part of the framework public comment period, is that that's going to be one major mechanism tool for the prioritization of all the requests received from SO and AC leadership. So those two pieces together are really a major component of how and when the SOs and ACs can really take an active role in the development of the budget, both in the inclusion of any special requests in the framework, as well as generating as much positive public comment for those special requests as possible during the public comment period of the framework. We'll take all those in hand and then be able to make better prioritization of all the requests.
Thanks. One thing I might also make note of, and it came out in the SOP working group meetings on Sunday, is one of the members raised the fact that, well, what if we're not interested in adding things, but we think we need to reduce expenses and take away things potentially, which, as Juan said, was probably the first time he'd ever actually encountered that notion, and there wasn't actually even a forum to address that. But I would like to just make that, you know, make that comment that in the framework piece, there is also the opportunity to talk about maybe what we shouldn't have or what we don't need or what is, in terms of value for money, something that is no longer required or not required. I think there's a question over there.
Yes, I'm Lise Fuhr from Denmark. .dk. To me, it's very nice to have another opportunity to comment, but I also like to have the reasons why you choose to follow some of the comments and why you choose not to. Because what I often see is that I can get a lot of comments, but we don't know why you don't take them into account.
Yeah, I think that's a clear commitment on all policy, but certainly in the last few years in the operating plan and budget to actually describe each comment and part of the public comment process as a synthesis of the public comments and identify it. We normally don't reply to each email submittal and say what specific to each one, but in the summary analysis we do provide that analysis in there. The other thing to address, which is a big change too, is the process of that prioritization, which is essentially what Byron and Leslie mentioned earlier, of having the removal of budget items. That happens. So in a typical budget cycle, our $59 million this past year of operating expenses, when the first submittal came in, it was over $75 million. So you can imagine. So there is a definite process that goes through, that goes from $75 million, the budget that was adopted. It was $59 million. So it's a very painful process of cutting back. And every organization, I'm sure, in the room has gone through similar situations in your own organizations or your own households, for that matter. So the part that we're trying to change in this as evolution of the ICANN operating plan and budgets process is to get that reduction process open and transparent. And I like the idea of having the community actually own the production process. And as the outgoing CFO, I'm going to encourage that as the next evolution. And I think the first step is to address what you just mentioned, that having an actual document where everybody in the community can see which items that were requested are not in the operating plan and budget. I think that's a powerful addition to the process.
Great, thank you. Any other, and I think, there is a significant attempt to make it much more transparent about where do the comments and inputs go, and I think everybody here on average has felt or at least made that comment, so we're encouraged to see that. Any other questions for these guys in the last couple of minutes that we have them? Anything else? I think, the notion of having a three-part cycle as opposed to a two-part cycle while potentially increasing the level of effort from the community is actually a step forward. For those who want to participate, there is definitely more opportunity to shape the process. Now, of course, that means you've got to participate in order to do that. So I would strongly encourage that. We have the opportunity. Please make your presence felt. Leslie. It's coming.
Thanks, Byron. Leslie Cowley from .uk. I'd just like to quickly say thank you very much to Kevin as the outgoing CFO for the work he's put in with the SOP group. That's been very much appreciated, and he's going to be a hard act to follow. And I'm sorry that another senior member of staff is leaving ICANN.
Yeah, I would absolutely echo that. Having worked with Kevin since the dawn of the SOP, even in just the roughly 2 years that's been ongoing, we've seen a significant change in the quality level of reporting, feedback, commitment to find answers, et cetera. So certainly on behalf of the SOP and myself, I would echo everything that Leslie has said and more. And good luck to you. You have decent-sized shoes to fill.
That's what I hear. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, guys.
You're moving on to something else now, right?
I'm going to find out.
Yep.
So part three of the agenda is a report on what is happening in the newly established finance working group. So this should be relatively brief, and also if there are any questions or comments, please speak up. So the finance working group had its first meeting this past Sunday. It's a good-sized working group, and I'll put up the members of the working group in a moment. But first, I just wanted to remind folks who may have seen this at some point in their inboxes, but the actual purpose of this working group. And fundamentally, if I could paraphrase, here's the actual purpose, but to paraphrase, it's to have the discussion about financial contributions from CC members to ICANN. In the most plain language, that is fundamentally what it's about, and to coordinate and facilitate CC manager participation in that dialogue and in that process. Also, I think important that to note is that the working group, as part of its activities, may submit comment on behalf of the working group itself. So that's another important element of it. I'm sure, as you can imagine, this has the potential to be an interesting discussion, but I would certainly like it to go forward in as much as possible a rational or reasonable way. We're starting fundamentally with the notion that no potential models are off the table. We'll look at a wide range of models in trying to get to a conclusion here. So I will also just put up the working group members here. I'm not a Mac person, so we'll see if it's true that any 5-year-old can actually operate a Mac, because they do everything a little bit differently. Oh, Alt-Tab is not the answer here. These are the members of the working group. I think it's important to note that it's a good-sized working group, so we should be able to get a lot of good input, different points of view. We have different size CCs, certainly different regions represented, and I'm sure different points of view. Even in just the first meeting, it was there was good discussion, good feedback, good input, so I'm certainly very encouraged by that. So these are the members of the working group. So if you're close to one and you want to make your thoughts known, I'm sure they'd be happy to hear from you. Oops. As it was the very first meeting of the working group, we were trying to get coordinated, get organized, get ready to go. And one of the things that we noted is there has been a fair amount of work done in the past at different points along the way in trying to wrestle with this issue. As most of you know, there is a current methodology, suggested methodology for how CCs contribute into the ICANN budget. It is relatively loosely interpreted, I would suggest, just by looking at the numbers associated with it. But there is, in fact, a methodology. So part of what we'll be looking at is how did we get there? What have the previous discussions, how have they gone forward? What came out of those discussions or reports or previous working groups? And looking at that history, former surveys, possible different models. So we'll take a sort of a historical perspective to make sure that we understand what's gone on before us and not try to necessarily reinvent the wheel, but take anything good that has come before us. So that's the first order of business. In terms of setting the expectation, my expectation, and I think probably most of the working group's expectation, is this is not a conversation that will be resolved in weeks or months. It may, in fact, extend over a season or two, perhaps not unlike the DRD, which I think has done a good job with a potentially contentious subject, but it has taken some time. And I think the goal here is to find the right solution, not the first-to-market solution. And also a review of the current financials and the way that financials are reported. Many of you hopefully, if we've done our job in the SOP, we'll be familiar with the expense area grouping report, which just looks, from an ICANN perspective, on how expenses are allocated, and of course they do that also by community. So there is a whole set of financial reports around what ICANN believes are the costs allocated to this community. So we'll also be reviewing that. There will be material, I think, interplay between the SOP and the finance working groups. In fact, I'm quite sure that will be the case. As having been the chair of the SOP, I know for a fact over the past 2 years that many times people tried to put other elements into the SOP hopper because it seemed like the most relevant group for a particular issue. And certainly this was one of those issues. While it is definitely not the SOP's business per se, it's clearly very related. As such, just administratively, one of the things that has happened is that I stepped down as the chair of the SOP as of the Cartagena meeting and was put forward for election to be the chair of the finance working group. So that within the working group has happened, but of course that will need to be adopted by the council itself. Hence the notion that I'm the pending chair. Pending chair. I think it's a new role. It's a new title. Yes. Anyway, the notion there is that there will be good dialogue and communication between the two working groups because clearly they're different, but there will be a lot of overlap and related discussion and activity. In terms of the SOP, Roloff has stepped forward and volunteered, or maybe the word is voluntold. No, I'm sure he volunteered of his own free will. And probably most of you, just by the laughter, understand what that means, right? To be voluntold in this community, yes. Anyway, Roloff is going to be stepping in to be the chair of the SOP, and as part of the agreement between the two working groups is each of the chairs will sit ex officio in the other working group. So we'll make sure we have those good lines of communication and dialogue between those two groups. So that's what the finance working group has been up to. I mean, I think the short story there is we're just getting going. The first will be to review what has come before us to make sure we can learn and take all the good that has happened there and to also make sure that we're well represented regionally, size-wise, sophistication, a good sort of cross-section of the entire community. I'm sure everybody has a point of view on this particular topic, and there will certainly, as we move forward, be opportunity for everybody to make their views known. So are there any comments or questions at this point? Just the best of luck to the working group on sorting this issue out. Okay. Then I think that brings us to the close of my part of this, a few minutes early, which is definitely how I like to run a meeting, a few minutes early. And at this point, just making sure, no questions, comments, I will pass it over to Chris.
Thank you. And Byron, thank you really hugely for the work you've done on the SOP. I know you're not going anywhere, you're just going to shifting across to finance, so to speak, but it's been a great working group, and it continues to be, so thanks for that. And Roloff, thank you for being prepared to participate. And we're moving up our next session, unless I'm... Okay, somewhat bizarrely on my agenda, the next session, which is the session with the board, is actually not been printed out. I don't know if there's any meaning in there or not, but so our next session is with Michael and Rod and Peter, and I guess some other board members will be wandering in. Michael, did I see you come into the room, sneaking in quietly? Do you want to come and join me up here so I don't feel too lonely? We are running amazingly slightly early, so we've got... yes, go ahead, Myron.
I am remiss, as Chris said, in just sort of moving across the hall from one working group to another, to personally thank all the members of the working group, the SOP working group. It was a brand new working group, much like the finance one. It started with a purpose, but really it was a greenfield endeavor, and I just want to thank all the folks on that working group, and there were quite a number, who did a lot of heavy lifting and often did it in a fairly tight timeline, as you can see by the process. We often had to do a lot of work with people, you know, needless to say, like every working group from around the world, in short periods of time. And I think we produced some good work that's been helpful to the community. At least that's the feedback I've received. So for the SOP working group over the past 2 years, well, thank you very much.
Well done, guys. Thank you. Michael, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, just possibly just an indication and apologies for not having been part of the session earlier. And that is, just so that there's no confusion, this is not an SOP, the draft of which has been approved by the board and then submitted to the ACs and SOs.
The
strat plan for consideration. The entire organization is going through this at a first brush at the same time. And I think possibly because of some of the pressures of work around other projects, it's all happening simultaneously.
We may end up, well, it's on the list, so should we wait until we, okay. Just so everybody knows, while we're waiting for Peter and Rod, as you all know, we sent out a call for the questions for this session. I have a list here of the things that people have asked. What I'm going to do is actually ask you to ask, because it's daft me sitting here trying to interpret what it is that you actually want to ask. So they seem to go pretty much by kind of topic. I've got a couple of things here about staffing, and I think that's you, Leslie. So who asked about the IGF renewal? Was that you, Paulos? Okay, cool. The strat plan process, I guess, is Byron. Geographic names is Annabeth, and you actually want to read that statement out, which is fine. Is that what you want to do to read? Yep, okay. And Keith, I know you wanted to ask about the ITU, Plenipot. So those are the ones that we know about. If we have time, then we're very happy. We'll take ad hoc questions. Peter, welcome. Please come and join us. We'll take ad hoc questions. And I also think it would be, and I'm going to start briefly by just reporting to ICANN about some of the stuff that we're doing, specifically what we've just been talking about, because I think that's fairly important. Welcome. Thanks. Yeah, wherever you like.
Someone's here.
Well, it's just the computer, so.
Just close that down.
Are we expecting Rod or? I was going to say, you'd doubtless be telling me that we have to wait for Rod before we get any answers. Great. Well, maybe while we're waiting, I can just briefly start and give you guys a quick update. I noticed there are some other board members here as well, so welcome and thank you very much for coming. I suppose the key thing I wanted to update you on is that we have now taken a significant step in what is euphemistically referred to as the contributions debate. And we have now set up our finance working group. That working group is tasked with a number of things, not just contributions, but one of its jobs is to work on methodologies and so on. Hi, Kurt. So we are making slow but steady progress on that front. I'll wait. It's okay, don't worry. The gun is pointed this way, so you'll be fine over there. Did anyone, Byron, did you want to say anything specifically about the fight? Because I guess there's going to be a need at some point for that working group to start talking to the board. Can you, Gabby, can you give Byron the microphone, please?
So I guess this is just a quick update for the board members in particular. We have just established a finance working group. The first meeting was on Sunday, and it was really an organization and coordination meeting, and its fundamental purpose is to discuss and deal with the CC contribution issue into ICANN. The first order of business will be to take a look at some of the work that's gone before us, which is there have been a number of working groups and activities over the years, and then also an examination of the potential models that we could look at in terms of various funding models. Currently, there is a tiered or strata-based methodology in place, which is followed to some degree, and it would be but one of the potential models out there. So we have good representation from every region. It's a decent size committee, so there are folks from large, medium, small CCs, different types of operators from every region. So I think we'll have good cross-representation, good input, and no doubt many different points of view. So we're just getting going. Sunday was the first meeting, but we are off and running on what will no doubt be an interesting discussion.
Trotting, I think, would be a better. Slowly cantering. Yes, of course.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Byron. I think that's very good news. And so thank you for the work that's gone into getting you to that stage. The reason why that's good news is the point that I've made previously, and it's largely about politics and perception, which is really, in this case, much more important, I think, than the money, although a lot of people also think the money is important. The CCNSO and the CCTLEs in general lose a lot of political influence and credibility in ICANN because of their approach to not financially, not appearing to financially support in a consistent and coherent way. So addressing that, I think, will make a big difference. So that's good news. Thanks.
Okay. So did you get an update from, does Kurt know where Rod is? On his way. All right. Did you want to, before we start addressing questions, is there anything you wanted specifically to mention? No? Kurt, do you have anything to say? You just came to watch the fireworks?
I asked Kurt to attend because I only saw this morning, about an hour ago, the very detailed question about wording in relation to Annabeth's question. I thought Kurt...
Very good.
I also suggested that Amy, the lawyer, hi Annabeth, it's a good question. If we can answer it today, we will. But, I mean, I'm really in the hands of the people who know this kind of stuff down to the level of detail that you're wanting. And if we can't get an answer today, I know that Kurt and Amy and the team will be happy to sit with you at some stage.
Well, should we take that Kurt's going to handle it, should we take that now? And Annabeth, do you want to start and say what you want to say, and then we can get Kurt to respond and Peter and Michael if they want to, and then we can move on to the other ones when Rod's here. Off you go.
Sure. It's about the post-delegation possibilities that was introduced in the DAG 4, mm-hmm. that we were actually very satisfied with the wording. So at least in Norway, it gave the support we needed to be able to perhaps support new GTLDs in geographical names. But there has been a changing in the words. And what's really confusing is that your letter, Peter, to the GAC, dated 23rd of November, uses the wording of the DAG 4, and the suggestion in the AG has changed that. And that's actually from the 12th. So that's a little confusing. So in the DAG and in your letter, you're talking about that ICANN will comply with a legally binding decision from a court in the country, in the relevant country, that has given the support. And in the AG, it said may implement. And it's quite natural that governments and also the CISO will feel that that's the weakening and not the assurance that we were hoping to have. And I think that might be a problem for giving the support in quite a lot of countries. So if you want the geographical names to take off, I would suggest that you look into that once more. And I'm not sure if it's intentional or if it's just a mistake. Thank you.
So, Annabeth, when you're angry with me, you stand and address me, so I feel much better that you're relaxed than just sitting and addressing me.
It's just that she's surrounded by allies, that's all, Kurt.
That's right. We received the same question in the GAC, as you can imagine, so we had a chance to look into it. and I can explain it, but we actually prepared a written response for Peter, so it'd be better if I read it because I'll be more coherent. So the answer centers around differences between ICANN's commitment to governments and ICANN's obligation to registry operators. So in the guidebook, there's a section in the guidebook that talks about this obligation to follow the laws, the decisions of courts, and it is also mentioned in the registry agreement. So this obligation really doesn't have anything to do with our relationship with GTLD registries, and we don't want to obligate ourselves in the agreement to GTLD registries. So in the agreement, it says ICANN may follow the rule of courts, but it also says that in the guidebook, and so we agree that language in the guidebook should change, and that we did change the language to advise applicants that ICANN has committed to governments that it will implement court orders. So we don't want to make that obligation in our agreement with GTLD registries, because it's not our agreement to registries, it's our agreement to governments. So we're going to revise the language in the guidebook section and say we're going to advise all applicants that ICANN will follow the court decisions. So it's that kind of parsing. I hope that was understandable.
Yes, it was. So but it won't be a real contract or an agreement between governments and ICANN. So this is really a different situation. You have a contract with the GTLD registry between ICANN and the registry, but there is not actually a contract between the government and ICANN. So to give that support, it's kind of giving away the government's sovereignty to a part, and that I think they might feel a little uncertain about this, just a sentence in a sample letter, and that's how it is today. So if you could look into that to give more assurance for the government that it will be followed if they have a legally binding court order.
Yes, so besides in the letter to government, which is just a sample, we can also put that letter directly in the guidebook. And I'll try to get you a better explanation or a change of why we don't want to put it in the registry agreement for legal reasons.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Annabeth, while you've got the microphone or just had it, did you want to say anything about geographics generally and where we stand in whatever it's called, the FAG or the
Well, my concern now with geographic names is actually what happens with the country and territory names in ASCII after a while, because it's obvious, and we come back to that with the IDN CCTLD PDP working group, and they have decided that it has to be at least one non-Latin character to be an IDN. And that leaves all the ASCII country and territory names that, for the moment, have been taken out in the first round. So we have to work, in my opinion, we have to work further on to find a solution for that. What do we do with those? Do we need them? Should we reserve them? Should we treat them as a special category? Should we take them back again into the GTLD under the same conditions as it is for other geographical yeah. names today? So the work's not stopped.
And I say this every time you say what you say, because just to be absolutely clear, this is not about the CCTLD community wanting to have more CCTLDs. This is about wanting to protect versions of names of countries. And the concerns that we have include things like the fact that Holland... It's the one example I use the most. Holland is not an official name. It doesn't appear on a list, but it is a name that is commonly used to as part of the Netherlands. And currently, that because that name doesn't appear anywhere on a list, then that means, if I understand it correctly, that that's subject to the objection process. If you then move to the objection process, the challenge, whilst it may not be a challenge for the government of the Netherlands, there are cultural and political challenges to the concept of governments objecting, one, and or two cultural and political challenges to the concept of governments paying to object. And the, and so the, it's kind of like a rolling effect. You could, the objection process is problematic for a number of governments for all sorts of reasons. The payment process is problematic for a number of governments for all sorts of reasons. And the naming situation is problematic. So it's all three of those things taken as combined that cause us issues. That's at least part of it, isn't it, Annabeth?
Yes, it's part of it. And it's also to avoid user confusion, because it's as how it is today, it's España could be GTLD, no, a CCTLD, NTLD. But Norway would not, Norway would, and it's a complete mess. So we have to find a solution for those questions still.
That sounds interesting. Rod, can you come and join us? The questions that we've been waiting for you are the ones that I know you've got statistical answers for, I don't know. Yeah.
So Annabeth, we should talk offline because translations are protected, so I want to understand exactly what the issues are, so we'll talk later. And also we found Holland on a list of translations of the Netherlands. So, you know, we kind of put it aside, but it seemed like, since it's such an important case, we should do a separate study for that and define whether it's protected or not.
I was just going to give a personal reaction to language like countries having cultural difficulties with taking part in an objection process. I'm going to need a lot more detail about that before I give that any weight. I'm going to need a lot of evidence as to why governments shouldn't, an individual government wanting to take part in a challenge process doesn't feel that it should pay the appropriate fees for taking part in that. I've got a very different view about the GAC as an institution taking part. It's an organ of ICANN, and if it's acting in a matter of public interest, I could be very easily persuaded that that's a very proper use of ICANN funds to take care of the public interest. But a particular government pursuing its particular interest in relation to its particular name, I'd need a lot of further information before I was persuaded that that was any different from a government taking part in any other commercial or quasi-judicial process, including appearing before anything in the GATT or the WTO or any other process.
So a couple of things arise from that. One, yes, I agree with you, the GAC would be a separate issue. The problem with that is that in order for the GAC, what that would mean is that the GAC would have to reach an agreement amongst themselves to object to a particular name, and the timing involved in the process, I suspect, wouldn't allow that to occur.
Well, I think that's appropriate. I don't think the GAC should take itself up, because it's not a matter of GAC interest in the particular case.
But that's what I thought.
Particular case
you're
of Holland.
About,
no, I can see the GAC taking issue in some matter that raises a matter of general public.
Oh, okay.
Or general public policy interest. Okay. Getting involved in individual countries' issues, I think, is inappropriate for the GAC unless it raises some kind of generic issue for all of them. If you've taken the example of Holland, so let's use that. If the Dutch government has a problem over Holland, then I think that's a matter for the Dutch government. And I don't understand why, so I would need a lot more information before I could see why I wouldn't just ordinarily be required to take that proceeding itself and pay its own fees.
Okay, well, and that's that I understand that view. And I can't give you evidentiary answers to it, but I can point to a couple of things that might be worth considering or looking at. First of all, as you all know, things like United Nations membership, United Nations contributions, in fact, ITU, all that stuff to do with money in respect to governments is all voluntary. And sometimes it's paid and sometimes it's not. That's the first point. The second point I would make is that if you go back to some of the, or if I go back to some of the travelling I did in respect to IDNs and trying to work through the process of how to get contributions from CCTLDs, and let's be clear, in most cases for IDNs at this stage, it's governments because exactly. There was a blanket in culturally, in some areas, a simple, straightforward, blanket, we will not, cannot, won't do that. Now, I'm not saying it necessarily that they are necessarily legally prohibited. I'm talking about the way they function. And whilst they were prepared to talk about making voluntary contributions, they were even prepared to talk about making percentage contributions. What they weren't prepared to do, as you know, was sign on the dotted line that they would pay. And paying a fee is, I would suggest, no different to that. But I'm not suggesting, I mean, we can't sort this out now, I'm just raising it as an issue.
I've supported and persuaded the board on that very issue, and we moved forward on ID and CCTLDs because of that. I can draw a very clear distinction between not paying a fee or having a voluntary contribution for getting your own, if you like, if that's how people see them, ID and CCTLD. I don't see that's the same class of issue as then wanting to take proceedings to stop someone else from having theirs or what they think is theirs. So I think I'd say I'm ready to be persuaded about this, but I think I need a lot more information.
Okay. I think we can't take that much further, so... Okay.
Well, suggest, because I know there's a fair amount of discussion between the CCNSO and the GAC, and I think that's something that may be worthwhile those two parties taking up. You know, the one thing that I think would be very interesting in that regard is potentially the creation of a fund. And, Peter, I don't think you would object to this, is if CCs and governments are willing to contribute to a fund where their colleagues are able to draw from that fund to fund objections. You know, that would be an interesting test of the process. You know, do you trust that your colleagues are not going to abuse money that you've put in to fund objections?
Okay, and I accept that, but I think I have to say, just so that we don't get lost in a debate about money, there is a higher level of issue, which is the concept of objecting in the first place. And look, I'm not here to push the government line at all, but I understand that governments have issues with entering into an objection process. Governments that don't even, and there are a number, that don't even, for example, recognise ICANN as having any authority whatsoever, moral or otherwise, are being... moral or immoral, exactly. Are basically being told that if they have a problem, this is how they have to deal with it. And again, I'm not pushing a barrow here. I'm just making the point that it's challenging for a lot of them. And the issue may be solvable. I'm specifically here talking about country names. I'm not talking about .Nazi. I'm just talking about country names. That is, I think, it would be easy enough to excise that from this game and actually say, look, if it's a meaningful representation, I know there's an issue with that and you've taken it out, but if it's a meaningful representation of the country... it's not the same process. The government of the country can simply, you know, it's on a list. It cannot be done. But anyway, let's not pursue that any further at this point. Rod, thanks. Welcome.
Thank you.
We've got a series of. We basically said, look, what do you want to talk about? This is the list. It's not meant to be specific. It's just a list. But the first issues on turnover and staff were Leslie's comments. So if I could ask Leslie to deal with that, that would be great.
Thanks, Chris. Good morning. As you've been pre-warned, my question's about senior staff turnover. One can accept that an incoming CEO will wish to make changes. That's quite normal. And obviously people will leave from time to time or maybe even be fired. But the high turnover of senior staff at ICANN has been a concern to many in the community. And I'd like to ask, what is the current retention rate for senior staff, say, over the last 12 months? And, you know, how does that benchmark, if you wish to benchmark that with Nominet? We've got an 86% retention rate of senior staff over the last 12 months and an average length of service of 5.5 years. And obviously there are huge benefits from that kind of continuity. So linked to that, you know, what is the statistic? And also, what measures are you putting in place to ensure retention and motivation and engagement of staff generally, but particularly senior staff? And to give you some time to think on that, for the board members present, what is the board's view on this issue? And I assume that it's one of the risk factors that as a board you would also be alive to. Thank you.
Sure. Well, thank you, Leslie. Obviously all personnel matters have legal issues involved and confidentiality issues involved, so we don't discuss individual cases, just to make that clear. And I think it's not what you're asking for, but I just want to make that clear. And it also makes some slicing of the data sensitive as well in terms of how it's handled. What we do as an organization is track overall staff retention and turnover. I can tell you that the overall turnover in the calendar year of 2009 was below 6%, which is extremely low by global standards. There's some organizations that are lower, but the benchmarking we do is against statistics such as the U.S. Department of Labor collects statistics by industry sector. In the high-tech sector, the turnover rate is slightly over 30% on average. In the nonprofit sector, it tends to be around 25%, 20 to 25%. So the turnover in calendar 2009, and I started in July of 2009, was extremely low, and I think it was actually lower in the second half of the year under my leadership than it was in the first half. And we can, pull some of that information together. Looking at this year's not over yet, so we haven't done the full analysis, but roughly speaking, it certainly has increased because there's been both voluntary and involuntary terminations. Far below the industry averages, but probably more like 15%, roughly speaking. And in terms of the evolution of the management team, it's been very deliberate for the most part, and it's been done based on consensus decisions made by the executive team of the organization. So every single new hire that has been brought in has been a consensus decision.
Wow.
Now that's consensus.
You should see him walk on water. It's amazing the power this guy has.
Is it everyone or just Rod? It's okay. Thank Rod for that.
Is there a tiki in the room?
He's just leaving.
Leaving.
Gabby, can we try handheld?
Chris? Sorry, Rod.
Sounds good. Now I can stop screaming in the front row. Thank you for your patience. Anyway, so we have an organizational effectiveness initiative that we reviewed with the board and presented to the board, and it's a bottom-up process that is involved breaking down ICANN into, I believe it's 12 working groups of 10 people each, all led by the staff, and looking at what do they think about ICANN, how's it running, how should it be improved internally, what are the issues, and we were very pleased. The key survey we did of staff in that, the response rate, I think, was between 80 and 90%, and it was the highest that the consultant had ever seen in an organization like ours. Anyway, so that's one effort to make sure that we're listening to employees. Another thing that I have done are called random employee lunches, or RELs, since we need more acronyms in the ICANN family. And they're literally random lunches. There's a spreadsheet listing of all the staff in offices. And then when I, for example, go to Marina Del Rey, we do a random selection of those I've not yet lunched. And we go on, 12 of us have lunch and an open conversation for an hour and a half. That's given me a chance to have face-to-face time with over 90% of the staff. And that's done, actually, it's just an incredible opportunity for me to learn from them and to meet the great people in ICANN. It's also meant to help retention and to help let them know I have an open-door policy. I mean, any member and staff can come to me if they want to and discuss an issue. I think we're and I think the probably a very important issue on that front is the retention of Akram Atallah as chief operating officer. I think Doug Brent was a very strong operating guy and very popular with the community, but Akram is also is an exceptional manager and leader who's had managed up to 1,500 people in very technical organizations spread around the world, and starting to see the benefits of that already. So that's a answered your question.
Leslie, if you wanted to respond.
Thank you. I'm not sure that answered the question. So the question was, what is the current senior staff retention rate? And obviously, we have no wish to discuss individual cases. That isn't where this is headed. The concern is about senior staff retention, which is very different than overall staff retention, and it would be helpful if that statistic over the last 12 months could be calculated and shared. Thank you. I should also add that many of us in this room have also experienced huge organizational growth and change, so we understand that the issues around that.
Thank you.
Can I just make a comment on this as well? Because I just want to pick up on a word that you said you understood when the CEO came in, he may wish to make some changes. I want to be very clear that Rod was asked by me and by the executive committee to do a number of things. When I took over as chairman at the end of 2007, really for 2008, I found that many of the internal systems in ICANN were either absent or antiquated or creaking at the seams. And it was very clear to me that we needed to go through a reasonable process of upgrading ICANN to the ICANN that I actually wanted it to be. It's pretty clear that we were going to have enormous change in the responsibilities in relation to the new GTLD program. It wasn't exactly at the time clear, but I was pretty clear that the JPA was going to come to an end, and we have to reposition. We still have to keep doing this. We have to reposition ICANN as a stellar example of a global body performing well. And the ICANN of 2006-2007 was pretty clear from the work that I was doing on the President's Strategy Committee and communicating with people and doing check that the ICANN, the early ICANN, was not in a position to move to being a global body capable of assuming the responsibilities that it actually wanted to have. And what we've now seen, of course, is what's matured into the requirements under the affirmation of commitments. That imposes a whole new level of demand on the organisation that the ICANN of 2006 and 7 really couldn't deliver. New GTLD is going to be enormous. New set of systems, and you'll understand this, Lizzie. I mean, you've seen the efforts to get information out of the finances. You know, the finance audit and many of the internal systems in ICANN just simply weren't up to it. So the message that I gave Rod when he came in was that we have to build an ICANN that's going to be a global, that is going to actually function as a global body. That's been where the direction has come from, as much as anything. In terms of the detail, The Compensation Committee sits and watches much of this, and it actually does benchmarking studies, and we are right in the middle of redoing that exercise so that ICANN is benchmarked against the right basket of companies and then at the right level within the basket. So that's going on. And the board itself obviously works closely with the CEO and has asked similar questions. And the way I create the retreats that the board does, the first retreat in the year tends to be very much an inward-looking one, and we look at our systems, and the second one tends to be the outward-looking one, and we look at where we're going. And so in Dublin, at the retreat in Dublin, we put all these very similar questions to Rod and went through the analysis of the staff and had the statistics and looked at that. And the board position, I guess, at this, because you asked what's the board's view. The board's view of this is that we're satisfied with the progress that's being made. So...
Okay, Leslie, we done? Okay. Paulus, I think you were the next. You wanted to ask about the IGF. Can I get a microphone for Paulus, please?
Thanks, Chris. Actually, it's very brief. I think one of the things that countries definitely we are dealing with is the current process of the processing the renewal or otherwise of the IGF. And in my country, we did face a number of questions that needed us as a CCTLD to clarify. And one of those questions involved a request to seek an understanding of what the ICANN stand is on the renewal of the IGF. And so I thought I would get this clarification since I couldn't get it very clearly online. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you. I think that's a really important issue for all of us, and many parties are involved in that discussion. As we shared at the IGF meeting in Vilnius, ICANN, and we consulted with the board, had a discussion. We clearly support the continuance of the IGF. There's a preference from the ICANN standpoint based on community input. Also want to state that our discussions on the IGF continuance have been done in consultation with community, different members, different groups out there, regional internet registries, ISOC, IETF, et cetera, informal discussions to make sure that we at least share our thoughts and that we have input we share with each other, that we'd like to see the IGF continued. That the preference is for it not to become decisional, that the preference is for it to continue to be multi-stakeholder and to treat all stakeholders equally, including both private sector and government parties. The person on our team who I could arrange to speak to the group who has the most knowledge is Bahar Esmat from our Global Partnerships team, who's the lead on this issue. But I think that summarizes it. And so what we're going to seek to do in the continuing of that dialogue is try to support the IGF, I think, as it's been functioning, and again, and have good discussions with many of the community partners so that we help to create together the future that we think is good for the multi-stakeholder model.
Thanks, Rod. And I'm conscious of time. I know you have other things to do.
I'd just like to jump in, if I can, Chris, and just report really another sort of success, if you like, in the area of international relations. And that is, first of all, that under Rod's tenure, we've created a much more explicit set of goals in terms of relationships with our siblings in the ecosystem. We've now got a very much clearer program under Rod's direction of outreach to the RARs, to the IETF, to ISOC, to all of the sibling organisations, so that we move forward together. We've had board-to-board meetings with ISOC, for example, and there's been a lot of cooperation. I don't know whether we've got time for Rod to talk about an upcoming meeting that he's attending in New York with the IDN. ICANN was asked to appear and speak on behalf of the Internet. We just instantly refused to fall into that trap. We've gone back and made sure that all the rest of the players in the ecosystem are either invited or our attendance is going to be either very limited or not at all. And let me just finish, I guess, with a little summary of the ITU relationship. When I started again, it was relatively bad. I went to see Hamid and Touray in Geneva in 2007. He came to see us in 2008. had a meeting, spoke at our meeting, came and had a private attendance session with the board in 2009, and Sharm el-Sheikh, he said at that stage orally at the IGF meeting, recognition of ICANN as the authority in relation to domain names, and now we've got Marrakesh a month ago, we've got the first formal footnoting, of course, but there's the first formal recognition by the ITU in Guadalajara, sorry. And we've responded, and I've had very good feedback, Rod, from your speech yesterday in terms of the recognition, the outreach to the ITU. So I think, you know, just another bit of good news, really, the global strengthening of the ICANN relationship in the ecosystem.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. And I am conscious of time. Byron, I know you had a question. Gabby, could you give the microphone to Byron? And thanks.
Thanks for joining us this morning. Actually, a question that I'd like to get both of your takes on it, because it's extremely relevant both to chair and to CEO, but clearly from different perspectives. And that's around the strategic plan and how we get to where we are today, which is certainly not what we anticipated a number of months ago. And really what I'm referring to is the notion that coming to Cartagena, the thought was that we would be, or the board would be, approving the strategic plan. Of course, strategic plan being arguably the single most important thing that a board does or has responsibility for. And given that we get to this place without achieving that goal, and I would argue the communication getting to this point has not been great, how is it that the board got to a point where arguably the most important thing that it does is not being achieved on the timeline that it's supposed to be, and that is an ongoing process? I mean, there shouldn't be any surprises here. This wheel should continue to turn the same way every year. And why are we so late? And then I guess fundamentally the same question for Rod from the staff perspective. How do we get to this place?
I think the single most important thing a board does is employ and then sustain its CEO, actually. But I agree with you that the strategic planning process is pretty high up there. I'm partly to blame. I'm you know, guilty of trying to change too many things too fast, I guess, in some ways. I actually don't think that the mechanism that we had, where we had 6 months of consultation on the strategy and then 6 months of consultation on the ops side, was actually appropriate. What it wasn't allowing was enough time for contention between the parties, and so I've been trying to move the staff to a process where we were looking at four-month cycles or even 4 3-month cycles, particularly as what we're now moving to is a much slower pace. The first strategic plan we came out with 5 years ago was 73 pages and really was a political response to the WSIS. You know, we've got an interesting history of budget development at ICANN and strategic planning. And for a long time, we didn't even have a strategic plan. We were in the organizational development stage where the budget really was the only strategic planning document we had. So this is a sort of an iterative process. What I wanted to get to was a process where the community effectively, and I've been encouraging the communities to develop their own input to the budget, go into that, publish the draft, and then go into contention phase where we look at and priority development. And we haven't really had enough of that. And we had that on the stage, in fact, in Brussels, where we were about to pass the budget, and we had community groups coming forward and saying, "My stuff isn't here." You know, we haven't had an explicit development of proposals going forward, preparing what that would look like. The entire wish list all costed out, which would probably run to $200 million. If everybody got what they wanted in a budget list, a strategic planning list, and then an objectives plan, then a budget, it would be. What I've been trying to do is work out a way of and changing the timing on the process so that we can get to that point. There can be some very healthy, I think, community infighting about who gets what done when, and then the board and the staff can go back and reprioritize. So to a certain extent, I've been responsible for some of that, but not all.
Can I just deal with that first, and then Rod. Thanks, Peter. I acknowledge that and accept that. From my point of view, you may very well be right in doing that and promoting that change. But from a process point of view, or from a community engagement point of view, given that our input is both desirable and required, it might perhaps have been better to say that that's what was happening, and maybe transition to that over a period of time. especially given that there was effectively a transition to a different strategic planning model last year, or at least a different shaped strategic plan format. Thanks, Rod. And so, you know, we just get used to that, and then the next thing happens. So nothing against necessarily the plan itself, but not the strategic plan, the plan to change the way the strategic plan is planned. You know, we need to know what's going on, because we're everywhere in the world, and for us to get together and be helpful, which is what we actually strive to do, takes a bit of planning in itself.
Chris, very good point. Can I, after Rod goes, I'm going to ask Kurt, who's now responsible for this, to actually also respond on behalf of the direct. Yeah, Kurt.
So all your comments are really, really well taken. Doug Brent, I know in previous meetings, put up the proposed cycle for how we were going to revamp this process. It really didn't generate much comment because in the abstract, a new process. Until you actually use it, you don't see the effects of it. But we tried in previous meetings to have a discussion about, or at least put it up, that we're considering changing the cycles. And then certainly we think that any strategic planning cycle requires the proper input from the CCNSO and the other constituency groups. We've had one consultation so far. Besides the community input, the board has had very specific input on the strategic plan, and even at this meeting gave direction on how they would like to see the plan amended to be more objective and more goal-oriented, comments people in this room made. So the board's not going to approve the strategic plan at this meeting, so that there is enough time to have another round of public consultation so you and others can reflect on the changes that were made based on your first comments, and also implement the specific changes the board requested to make it more objective and goal-oriented, which I think came out in the consultation we had with the CCNSO also.
Byron, did you want to say something?
Sure. Just to follow on, improving the process, I mean, I think I and others would applaud any action that is going to improve the process. So it's not really a comment on that. It's really about how did we get there, because one of the real challenges here is not that the new process is bad or better. We don't really even know yet. But part of it is how it's communicated. I mean, nature abhors a vacuum, and what we found ourselves in this fall was a vacuum of information about a fundamental change to a fundamental process that requires us to participate. And it's not just we are required to participate, we're proactively trying to help in the process and do good work and provide good input, which we are fundamentally precluded from at this point. And it was never clearly laid out the why and the when of what was happening. And I think that was did a disservice to the momentum that this community has built up in engaging and providing good feedback. And it certainly does a disservice to ICANN as an organization that we were left in this vacuum. So in the spirit of trying to make a constructive contribution, you know, things like getting the updated plan November 27th at 8 p.m. on a Sunday night, while that may just be when it was available, those are the kinds of things that make community members go, are you kidding me? 1 week before Cartagena, you delivered at 8 p.m. on a Sunday night? Really? Like, honestly, is that when you're going to do it?
Okay, the whole world doesn't revolve around Canadian time.
that's morning. That's
actually
morning
Monday morning. Okay, for
that's morning tea time for me.
It was 5 p.m. California time, which I would still make the same comment. But notionally, Sunday afternoon, pick your time slot. You know, those are the kind of things.
Can I just agree with you? I think the board's feeling a bit the same, quite frankly, and we don't feel we've had enough time on it ourselves, and we're scheduling extra time here to go through it, and we're delaying the process. I suppose it's an excuse to say we spend all our time in Trondheim, going through new GTLD resolutions, and so we probably need to make sure we keep our eye on the basics as well as having to deal with some of these. And there's been a couple of other crises that we've dealt with, and so I suppose that's the usual kind of reason. But we're on to it, and thank you for the comments.
And Byron, if I can just thank you for the excellent leadership you've shown in pulling that group together, and I can understand the frustration, and you do that work, you get everyone spun up, ready to go, organized, et cetera, and there's not the insertion points or the dialogue points that you were hoping for. So I think, first, thank you again, and secondly, you know, Kurt, I think we on staff and others will see what we can do to try to improve the process moving forward, and if you want to sit down and discuss that while we're here too, would welcome that feedback. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. I know we're short of time. Very briefly, Keith, did you just want to quickly talk about the ITU, or have you, has Peter answered your question? It was, okay, cool. Anyone got, okay. Rod has to go. Does anybody have any last, yep, Roloff, I have your hand up at the back.
Thank you to all of you as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rod.
Roloff Meyer from SRDN. This is addressed at you, Peter. You made some kind of you caught me unawares, but you made some kind of a comment on the subject of the financial contributions working group, where you made a link between contributions and respect and influence in the ICANN community or something. Do you think you can repeat that statement?
It's a statement.
We probably wouldn't want you to, but
it's a statement I've made to the CC community for many years that it loses the time that it's taken to come to grips with making financial contributions and not having a mechanism ready, I have seen has cost the CC2LE community political capital. And it's good that there's now a mechanism in place to deal with that. It's the basic reality of politics. The people who pay money and participate, you know, are taken as being supporters of the system. The people who come but don't pay any money are seen as supporting it, but to a lesser extent.
But I think you also made a link between influence in the system. And well, is this just a remark and a notion that is valid for the CCNSO? Because you know better than I do that there are organizations within the ICANN community that don't contribute financially, at least, at all. And
sure.
Does that have any influence on their political standing or on the impact they have if they make comments?
No, I think if you're making, there's an obvious comparison between the at-large community, for example, and the CCTLD managers who are seen as registry operators, which many of them, you know, generate large amounts of revenue. There's a great deal of, it's easy to distinguish between those and the at-large community.
Okay, but I know that my government generates far more money than SRDN does. And I don't think you expect any contribution from GAC in any way related to their turnover or whatever you call it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Can I, Roloff, just my take on it is that I accept that there is disquiet amongst some people in the GTLD world about what they consider to be a mismatch, if you will, between contributions from the G world and the C world, and that some people in the G world, as Peter has just said, put, you know, we're simply just another registry operator, and we should be treated in the same way. I would not, however, go as far as Peter in suggesting that has necessarily a roll through effect on political capital or influence. My experience of dealing with the GNSO in almost every aspect, both as a council and individual members of the GNSO, has been that over the last 3 or 4 years we've actually developed an extraordinarily cooperative and close relationship. We know we don't agree on a whole heap of things, and we even, as you would know, talk about the fact that we don't pay as much money as they do. So it's not hidden, it's out in the open. Now, that doesn't mean that Peter's not correct and that there are some people or some groups of people who think we don't have the right to be as loud as we are or speak as much as we do or have, etc. That may well be so. But as a fundamental principle, I don't believe those two things are as connected as perhaps Peter does.
Well, that's because you haven't seen the board coming to a vote on issues and having, and I can particularly reference the IDN-CCTLD discussion about whether or not IDN-CCTLD should be linked to contracts. And you will remember board members who sat there quite clearly and said no shoes, no shirt, no vote, and made it absolutely clear what their position was, and the reasoning they gave for that was the lack of, it was in part the current failure of the CCDLE community to adhere to a system of voluntary contributions. And when that was being proposed as the mechanism for the new idea in CCTLDs, they pointed to your history and said, why should we trust this group in relation to this? This is an explicit discussion.
Sorry, I accept that. And if you want to be specific about the board and specific about certain issues, I would agree with you that, not that I think it's a loss of political capital, because I think that has a different meaning, but I would certainly accept that there were discussions on the board and board members whose view is that our methodology for dealing with stuff wasn't acceptable, and it, as you said, no shoes, no shirt, no Steve Goldstein. Leslie.
Sorry, it's a different subject. Is that okay? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because, well, I think most people know my opinion about financial contributions by the CCTLD community. But if the board reacts to that situation in such a way, it almost forces me to reconsider if the financial contribution that SIDN has been paying over the years, if that has had any effect. Because I'm probably considered, Ed.nl is probably considered part of the CCTLD community. And if the board has such an antagonistic feeling about the CCTLD community because they don't contribute, then what's the point in contributing as long as it's not the whole community? Do you understand what I mean?
I think that's a question you'll have to answer for yourselves. I'm not sure I can help you with that.
It was aimed at them.
Michael?
I think possibly I sit somewhere in between Chris and Peter on that one. Because I agree with Peter. I've seen certain individuals who take the community as a whole and lump them together and say, and I think Rulof's point is absolutely correct. You know, SIDN is paying a contribution which potentially is out of sync with what they were actually obliged to do. I know that the CCTLD with which I'm associated, given the fact that we register at the third level rather than at the second level, we could get away with paying even less than we currently pay, but you know, compared to the number of actual registrations at any level that we have, we're making a relatively small contribution. And I think, and there are some that are making no contribution, and there are others who are making an even larger contribution. I think for some individuals that concept just doesn't wash and they can't get beyond it, and I think it's very easy to point a finger at Steve Goldstein because he's no longer on the board and he's no longer here, and also because he's done a huge amount of brilliant work to facilitate internet connectivity to developing countries across the world. So he's not a person who, you know, is centered around a particular country, but Steve had a particular view. And I think the point that Peter is making is not that necessarily, or at least my perception is not that necessarily there's a general view, but rather in the minds of certain individuals, that process doesn't quite wash with them. They don't understand that, they don't comprehend how you can then regard a community based on the fact that some are contributing way in excess of what they potentially should and others are contributing absolutely nothing. And I think it's something that we're going to have to deal with. It's a question of marketing, the fact that this is a community where some people are willing to contribute more than they absolutely have to, on the basis that some of their fellows can't contribute even what they potentially should.
Good point. Leslie. And then we really do have to wrap it up. So.
Just, I was frustrated at not getting a direct answer to my questions, so I went away and did it myself. I think there's an ICANN senior staff turnover rate of 78%, which is of 9 VP chief level staff. I think you have 7 new. So if that helps inform board deliberations going forward, then that's my calculation anyway.
Thank you, Leslie. We really need to wrap this up. Thanks, guys, for coming. And we'll continue the discussions as we always do. Annabeth, I know you asked a deadline. I'm going to ask Kurt afterwards if that's okay, because it's too hard to do now. Okay, we've got a Gabby. Are we having coffee now? Is it now the right time for coffee, Gabby? Given that it's not actually on my agenda.
11 o'clock. Okay, so the next session is the IANA session. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, Russ.
The next session is the IANA session that starts at 11. If you want to go and grab a cup of coffee and come back in, that would be fantastic because we do need to keep going to get everything done in time.
Beat you in doing the sum was